Hey everyone, I think I'm going to get started on the meeting now because we have reached the appointed hour of 4 o'clock here in the afternoon. So I'd like to call the March 16th Budget and Finance Commission regular meeting to order. I want to thank everyone for joining us for this commission meeting. This meeting is taking place online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and to ensure that the community's ability to participate is maintained. With that, we'll jump right in. And Allison, if you could be so kind as to have roll call, please.
Commissioner Beasley.
Here.
Commissioner Mason.
Here.
Commissioner Newell.
Here.
Vice Chair Salverson?
Here.
Chair Latrick?
Here.
Thank you.
All right, it seems we have a quorum. And we'll go ahead and proceed with the Pledge of Allegiance. And if I can ask Commissioner Mason to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd be grateful.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America
and to the Republic which stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. Again, thank you for everyone joining us remotely. I think you're becoming accustomed to it. It's been a year that we've been meeting remotely, some more than others. But I also want to welcome back our team of consultants from CBIZ. We'll be hearing from them a little later in the agenda as we tackle the pension policy recommendation. The commission meetings are being maintained so that a regular order of business is being held. So the meeting formats that you've been experiencing in the past, if you've attended any of the commission meetings or the council meetings, is pretty similar. I'm going to take the time just to read so we have it into the minutes, some instructions on how to participate. If you're used to doing this, you can sit back and listen. But if this is your first a couple of times in, then you might find this interesting. First, you have to be on Zoom, and since you're here and I'm looking at you, you apparently are. Or you can do that by telephone if you called into one of the numbers that were provided. For those of you who might be unfamiliar with Zoom, and I'm kind of looking at the participant list, I can't tell on a couple of you, so I'll just continue on. Please, just to conduct a seamless meeting here, please hold all questions and comments until each presentation has been completed. That's either by staff or by our guests, our consultants. If the public wishes to address the commission on any agenda item, or during the call to audience, you can raise your hand only when I announce it. It's appropriate to do so. So there are two ways that you can do this. First, for those participating on a platform other than phone, so by computer through Zoom, find and select the participants icon. This will open a dialog box that lists all the participants in the meeting. So you can see that in the middle of your screen, down the center at the bottom. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you have had an option to raise your hand. For those who are participating via phone, and I don't know if we have any, but it's a little simpler. You just simply press *9 to raise your hand, or press *6 to mute your microphone. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced, and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we will not be able to discern which topic you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Now, just to give you a heads up, we have on our agenda today a final discussion by the Commission regarding the PSPRS pension program policy where a recommendation from this commission will be made to the council. In regards to that, I do intend to allow public comment once the presentation has been made. If anyone wishes to do so, please follow the directions that I just gave you. Once your hand is raised, I will ask Ms. Cote to unmute your microphone. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. Also, most importantly, please make sure you are not muted on your personal device. As with all commission meetings, once you're selected, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. It's also helpful if you would indicate whether you wish to have your video turned on. Otherwise, we will just listen to your audio. Speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes, and we ask that you respect the 3-minute timeline. So for most of you, this is probably a rerun, but I want to make sure that anybody who's attending tonight has the ability to participate when noticed. Well, with that, I'm going to move on to the next item on the agenda, and that's the call to the audience. Let me ask if we have any blue cards, Allison, anything from the audience?
Nothing from the audience, Mr. Chair.
So you have none?
None.
Okay. Does anybody wish to address the commission through call to the audience? Now's the time to raise your hand. All right. I show none. Allison, we have none. All right. In that case, I will close the call to audience at this time. And let us move on to the staff liaison report. I'm going to open up the floor for Mr. Kephart. Please proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Just a couple items to report to you this evening. As mentioned last week, staff is busy in the budget process. We have now wrapped up and concluded all of our departmental budget meetings. We've kind of formulated what kind of a draft budget is shaping up like for next fiscal year. And as is normal during these this time of year, we've got more requests than we have resources. And so we're in the process of kind of going back with different departments and looking at our budgets, trying to call through those, trying to get to a place of balance and structure with the budget process. And as mentioned last week, our plan is to distribute the budget both to the council and to you as commissioners on April 14th for review. Tomorrow, actually, we have a meeting with our benefits broker. This is all related to the budget process, but our health benefits are under review as well for next fiscal year. And so we'll be looking at our plan and renewals and what that is shaping up like. As you're well aware, during the budget process, it's kind of a process that is iterative and that is dynamic. And so we're continuing to gather information of different impacts to the budget and trying to firm up what the budget looks like. And that's all part and parcel to what our meeting tomorrow as well. And then lastly, I just wanted to thank the commission. I know several of you have provided comments to the council regarding the strategic leadership plan. And so I can assure you that those comments have been forwarded to the mayor and council will be forwarded to the mayor and council. And so I just wanted to thank you for your input in this critical process for the town. With that, I'll be happy to entertain any questions from the commission regarding these items or really anything else.
Let me just ask one question, David, if I could. I just reported that you intend to distribute the recommended budget from the town manager on the 14th of April, and I presume that'll be on our agenda for the 20th of April. And then just to, would it be helpful The commissioners would be urged to submit written questions to you ahead of time rather than waiting for the 20th, enabling you to investigate or look into what type of response needs to be made, and that we could combine those to distribute it at the time we send out the agenda. The public would see the questions and see your responses, but at the same time, it wouldn't preclude us from having further discussions and questions at the commission meeting. What do you think about that?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I like that idea. I mean, any time that staff kind of has advanced notice of questions or comments regarding items under discussion, I think that helps us prepare and be more fully prepared and have a more complete and constructive answer to the commission regarding those items that are under question. So I like that idea.
Okay. If none of the commissioners object, and again, I'm not attempting to cut off any discussions that could occur at our meeting on the 20th of April, which just, as David says, gives an opportunity for staff to respond and tell it with facts and figures and intelligence. So with that said, I'll work with David to set a timeline to get that back to him, and hopefully it'll be beneficial for you and you'll be able to see what everybody else is asking. Thank you for your report, David. Appreciate that. I'm going to move on to item number one. Allison, could you please read item number one to the minute?
Agenda item one, review and approval of the March 9th, 2021 special session meeting minutes.
Okay. Minutes were distributed with our packet, and I want to know if there's any questions from the commission members or comments regarding the minutes from the last meeting.
I have a question. I know that our the minutes include relatively brief summaries of business items and not necessarily try to explain where the discussion went during the during our last meeting. I was wondering, knowing that our agenda for today's meeting has a more detailed piece of summary of what was discussed, when is a good time to ask for the agenda for today's meeting to be better adjusted to the actual conversations that we had at our last meeting?
And you are directing that question to who?
That's a great question. I would think either staff or council. I'm concerned that there is an error in the summation of last meeting's discussion that was placed in today's agenda. And I'm uncertain when in the meeting, since we're discussing what happened during the last meeting, if now is the appropriate time to ask for that to be adjusted, or is there another time during this meeting to discuss that?
Is there so you're saying there should be a correction to the minutes as they're put out?
Well, I'd say the minutes are correct, but it, you know, since we're discussing what happened, the minutes contain the discussion of what happened at our last meeting. The agenda for today's meeting also contains a summary of the discussion that I believe needs to be more clarified. And I'd like to know if this is the time to do it or later.
It would probably be later during your discussion. And understand that by state law, you have to have a certain type of minutes taken. You can't have thorough discussions put down.
Right. So my question was just, you know, when do I discuss that? I think there's a clarification that needs to happen under the agenda that summarized last meeting's discussion.
Okay. So you're all right. Then why don't you discuss it when you get to the particular topic today?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And I think to add to that, we'll take your discussion point as we get there before we ask the presentation of the item itself. So I'll have you up first, David, there. Okay, then we still have this open. If there's no other questions or comments regarding the meeting minutes from last week, can I have a motion?
I move to approve the minutes as written.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a seconded motion from Vice Chair Salvinson and a, was that you, Mike?
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner Mason has seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No opposed? So the minutes pass. All right, we're next going to move to item number two. And Allison, would you read that into the minutes, please?
Agenda item two, presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2020-2021 financial update through January 2021.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to make a leap of faith here that this presentation will be done by Wendy Gomez. And David, am I correct on that? All right. Wendy, where are you, Wendy? There she is. Okay. So, Wendy, the floor is yours. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lashford, Commission members. Pleased to be here to present next month's financials. Let me go ahead and share my screen so I can bring up the presentation. There we go. Can everybody see that okay? All right. So jumping right in, we're going to cover the funds that we always typically cover each month, the general fund, highway fund, and the community center fund. Starting off with the general fund, so our revenues, our major categories there, things still looking very positive. On the revenue side, first, local sales tax, our actuals through January are about $12.5 million. That equates to just over 69% of the budget through January. So right now, we are looking to, in that category, about $2.1 million over budget, and that's due to some of the same categories we've been touching on throughout the fiscal year that are performing quite well. That includes construction, retail, utility sales tax, as well as online or remote collections. For the state shared revenues, we are at about $8.3 million through January, or 62.6% of the budget there. We are expecting to end that revenue source over budget as well by about $400,000. And that is due to primarily the sales tax, the state shared sales tax, which is looking well. And also the vehicle license tax. Both of those are trending above budget at this point in time. Charges for services, we've talked about this, it seems since July, but with COVID, those revenues are being impacted. Really the shortfall there that we are anticipating at the end of the year is due mostly to fare box revenues, transit fare box revenues, as well as parks and recreation programming. So we're just over 50% of budget through January. Licenses and permits, we've also talked about this category outperforming the budget. It's over budget already by about 19% or 1.9 million. We are looking to end the year more than $1 million over budget there. And that is due to the strong single family residential activity that we've been seeing. Just to throw out some numbers, for those licensed, we are at January, we're at 277 permits issued through January, and our budget was 225 for the full fiscal year, so we've already exceeded the budget. And commercial activity looks good as well. And then all other, I have off to the notes what all is encompassed in that category, but that is at about $6.5 million. Or 79% of the budget. The reason why that looks so high year to date is because of the CARES funding that's in there, the $5.3 million that we received. But we are expecting that actually to trend under budget in total, and that is due to our RTA transit reimbursements from COVID, the COVID impacts there. So in total for the general fund with the revenues, we are at just under 3.3 million in actuals through January, which is just under 70%. That's great. Looking at a year-end estimate of about 46.1 million, and that would bring us almost 3 million over budget at the end of the year, or 6.4%. And again, that's due to the strong activity that we're seeing with permit revenues, as well as our local sales tax. On the expenditure side of the general fund, starting with personnel, we are at 14.8 million through January, or just over 51% of the budget. We are expecting some savings there, looking at a year-end estimate of about 28.3 million. And that is due to vacancy savings from positions that we've either purposely held vacant or happened to become vacant for a bit of time and then were refilled, as well as COVID. I mentioned the RTA transit reimbursements a minute ago. Obviously, we're also going to see some transit personnel savings as a result. On the O&M front, we are at about 5.4 million through January, which is just under 48% of our budget. So they are still trending a bit below budget at this time. But again, that is due to those projects I've mentioned last month that we kind of held off on just to be conservative in terms of when we started them. And now that those are commencing, we should see that activity ramp up. On the capital side, same here. We had kind of held off on some spending. This is some of the projects that we had budgeted as a result of the freed up monies from the CARES funding. We have actuals of just over 270,000 through January, and we are looking to come in about on budget, just a bit under budget at the end of the fiscal year. And then our transfers out, those are pretty standard. That's our transfers to the debt service fund, to pay debt service, and then our CIP transfers. And as a reminder, we've got the free CIP transfers that we do each year. So when you get the February financials, you'll see a second transfer in those actuals. In total, for the general fund, on the expenditure side, actuals are just under 22 million through January, which is about 49% compared to the budget. We are expecting a year-end estimate of about 43.4 million, and that would equate to savings of about 1.2 million or 2.7%. And again, that's tied to the personnel savings that we're expecting, as well as O&M. Here's a chart from general fund through January. You can see the revenues, 30.3 million compared to last year's actuals of 23.7 through January. Obviously, the big chunk of that is the CARES funding. But even when you back that off, we're still up year over year, and that's due to the good performance that we're seeing with local sales tax as well as license and permit revenues. When you look at the expenditures, spending is just under a bit, 22 million compared to 22.6 million last year. That's due to kind of savings sprinkled across the board. Personnel being down year over year due to COVID, et cetera. And then O&M as a result of kind of holding back and being conservative on that spending. Right now, the fund is looking at a surplus year-to-date of about $8.3 million. We are expecting to end the year with a surplus of about $2.7 million. As a reminder, we did budget a planned deficit or use of fund balance in the general fund of about $1.2 million. So you can see that's a swing of about $4 million to the good there. We are expecting an ending fund balance of about $23.6 million at this point, which equates to roughly 53% of our budgeted expenditures. And just throwing this on there for comparison, that would exceed the council's 25% policy by about 12.5 million. Moving on to the highway fund, no real change there from January. Our HERF revenues are still looking good. They're at about 2.1 million right now, or 61% through January. We are expecting to end the year a bit over budget just based on trends that we're seeing with that revenue source. We had mentioned previously the reimbursements for the LaToya project on the state grant category. Because the LaToya project is done, we aren't anticipating any reimbursements right now. So that year-end estimate has been adjusted accordingly. On the expenditure side for the highway fund, actuals are about $2.1 million or just under 54% through January. The figures do include the fall portion of the town's payment preservation program. And we are expecting a little bit of savings year end due to personnel of about $193,000 or 5%. And that is tied to the LaToya project, the temporary personnel that wrapped up that project. There's a chart for the highway fund, pretty standard there. The revenue is $2.1 million compared to $2.4 million last year. I think I'd mentioned last month that's due almost entirely to the HERF revenues. We had a one-time allocation from the state last year of about $200,000. That's the bulk of that difference. On the expenditure side, $2.1 million compared to $1.7 million last year. That's just attributable to the timing of when those capital expenditures happen to hit. Right now, the fund is sitting at a year-to-date surplus of just under $60,000. We are expecting to end the year with a bit of a deficit of about $69,000. And just to compare that to the budgeted deficit was about $160,000. So some little bit of positive impact there. And then expecting to end the fund balance of just over $750,000 at the end of the year. And finally, the community center fund, the revenues, contracted operating revenues continue to look good. We're at about 57% of the budget or $2 million through January. To compare to last fiscal year, up about 15.5% or about $270,000 compared to last January. The town operating revenues, we've talked about those previously, obviously with the facility being closed, COVID, et cetera, those revenues are trending below budget. We're going to end the fiscal year about $500,000 under budget in that category, so we're continuing to watch those and adjust if necessary. The half-cent sales tax revenues are looking good. They are currently at about $1.7 million. We are expecting those to come in about 8% over budget at the end of the year. That's due to retail and remote collections. For the expenditures, contracted expenditures are currently at about 58% of the budget through January for $2.6 million. When you compare that to last fiscal year, that's about an 8% difference or $223,000. That's really due to the fact that we had the leases that ended, some of those equipment leases that dropped off, and personnel, reduced personnel as well. The town operating expenditures are below budget due to COVID, so we are hoping to offset a good chunk of the revenue shortfall. Obviously, with the facility being closed, COVID, we also didn't have staff or personnel or as much personnel in there. And so we are expecting some savings there to help cover that revenue shortfall. The chart for the community center funds, revenues about flat. Last fiscal year, up just a smidge, $3.9 million compared to $3.8 million. On the expenditure side, $3.1 million in actuals for the current year compared to $3.7 million last fiscal year. And that's kind of across the board reductions that you see there, both on the contracted operating expenditure side, as I mentioned just a minute ago, but also the town operating expenditures are lowered year to date compared to last year, too. Right now, the fund is sitting at a surplus of about $750,000. We are expecting to end the year with a surplus of about $113,000. Just for comparison, we budgeted a surplus of about $220,000. So again, we're watching the impacts really of the town operating revenues and hoping to cover that with some of the contracted revenues looking good, as well as the local sales tax in the fund to help minimize that difference there. And that would bring us to an estimated ending fund balance of about $975,000 in the community center fund. That is my last slide. And so at this point, I'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
I have a quick little question, Wendy. It's not really necessary material, but I'm just curious on your the chart that's got all the detail for the community center under expenditures for G&A, not the chart that you showed, one of the charts that was in our package we got.
Gotcha.
Right. And under G&A for expenditures, we more than doubled from last month to this month. So there's, I didn't know if there was something kind of a one-time hit to that, or if that's something that's going to continue. Like I said, it's not hugely material, but.
Right. Yes, Chair Latchford, Vice Chair Silverson, thank you for that question. I had guessed that would most likely be noticed and asked about. So what that is about is they have actually taken the push costs, which were previously in their maintenance line, and they have chosen to move them up with G&A so that they can get a better analysis at the end of the year of the financial performance for just 36 holes. And so those costs, the water, et cetera, which had previously been shown in maintenance, has been moved up to G&A and will be shown in that line from now on. So that's the difference that you see there.
So they're not going to restate the previous couple of months, or I guess it's January. Okay. Okay. So for this year, they're going to change the classification of those costs.
Yes. Yes. Effective January. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just have questions from other members?
Yeah, I just have a couple. On the, you say that you, the projects that you've been kind of holding off on, that you're going to maybe start doing some of those for the rest of the year. How much will that impact the current increase in fund balance you're showing?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Commissioner Mason. Are you looking at maybe just the year to date and how that may impact that?
In your analysis on the general fund, you said that, I think the last sentence there about you might start doing some of the projects that you deferred.
Right.
And if you do that, how will that impact the increase that you're showing in the fund balance of the general fund?
Commissioner Mason, we've actually factored those projects into the year-end estimate, so it won't change. I mean, we're already accounting for those. We were just kind of holding off on them to see how the revenues progressed and how COVID played out. And now those are commencing, and they're included in the year-end estimate.
Okay, good. On your single resident permits, do those permits, do they also include renovation projects as well as new builds?
The figure that I threw out is just new build. Okay. That SFR figure is just the new builds. But in terms of the revenues, that would include revenues from renovations. But just the permit number is the new builds. Does that answer the question?
That works. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Members have other questions? I have just a couple here. I guess I think they'd be more educational, but we're getting now starting to make the final turn coming into the end of the year. And how's the capital plan coming? Is that going to be expended for the end of the year? All of the projects that we had in there, and they look like they're going to occur and happen. I think in the last couple of years, we've had some that had to carry over from to the next year.
Sure, Chair Latchford, I can speak to that a little bit, and Mary and Dave can jump in or chime in if they would like. We regularly touch base with the project managers on those projects, and I think they're... after a bit of a slow start to the fiscal year, I think things have been progressing nicely. I know there's been some struggles on some of the projects with obtaining materials. And so that had caused a little bit of project delays here and there. Procuring vehicles, there's been a little bit of a delay there. But aside from COVID impacting that and those struggles we've seen there with obtaining those materials and those delays, things are progressing nicely. I know we are going to have some carryover in certain areas, certain projects, and I'd have to refresh myself on what those specific projects are going to be. But things are moving along quite well.
Yeah, I've been reading quite a bit in the news regarding the impact and shortages that are occurring through production and supply lines for many, and I was wondering if that had any impact on us in delaying projects into next year.
Sure, Latchford, it has, absolutely. It definitely has. I think with our, for example, I think it was our Naranja Playground project, we had a little bit of difficulty with procuring some of the materials for that. And so just delays here and there, that's been the biggest, I'd say, obstacle to completing our projects this year.
Gotcha. All right, thank you. And then on a little bit smaller note, back to the general fund, RTA, interesting. It seems to have popped up here a little bit, and I know they've been dealing with an issue of low ridership rates and everything, but on a typical year that's not being impacted by a pandemic, how do they normally contribute to our surplus or deficit? And how are they performing now? Or how is that how is that program performing now?
Sure, Chair Latchford, I want to say that our typical maintenance of effort for our transit services is about 100 to 150,000, if I recall correctly. So those RTA reimbursements that we have established through our IGA covers all of those transit costs, and then we're required to foot that maintenance of effort. And so, you know, what we're seeing right now is purely just due to the impacts of COVID. It's no change to the IGA or anything of that sort, but it's just the fact that transit, public transit's been so heavily impacted that we are definitely not going to be billing or getting reimbursed for a good chunk of what we had budgeted. But on the flip side, we're also going to see pretty considerable personnel savings and probably some O&M savings too.
So generally, it has a very immaterial impact on the surplus and deficit.
That's correct.
Okay. The line, yeah. Okay. All right. Got it. All right. And then my last question. I know I've asked this before. I'm just a little anxious to find out. And that is, obviously, the most recently executed rescue plan has been done by the administration. And I'm wondering if we're hearing anything about the allocation that we might be looking at here in the very near future. They certainly are out promoting it, and I was wondering if they promoted us.
Yes, Chair Latchford, thank you. Yeah, we are looking at close to $11 million that we're expecting to receive over two fiscal years. And we do, you know, obviously want to dedicate those to strictly one-time uses. Versus covering anything with recurring costs. But yes, over the next two fiscal years, we are expecting a total of just under $11
million. $11 million? Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations to us. Okay, so thank you very much. I've got the floor open. Does anybody else have questions for Wendy before we let her go?
Wendy, do you know if there are any restrictions on how those funds can be used?
Commissioner Beasley, there will undoubtedly be some restrictions on those. I don't have all those details yet. I've actually signed up for a webinar where I'm hoping to get more details on the program. Dave and Mary may have further information on that, but I'm quite certain there are some restrictions on there. Whether it's completely similar to the CARES funding, I'm not quite sure at this point, but certainly we'll have those down, obviously abiding by those and moving forward accordingly.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that's good news, Wendy. And I think given the fact that the town's taken so many steps to try to help residents and businesses, then this will be well needed. So.
Yeah, absolutely, Chair Lockford.
And I'll jump in there, if I may, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Peterson. There's a couple restrictions on the use of the monies. One is that they can't be used to cut taxes. And the second restriction is that they can't be used to pay down pension obligation debt or pension obligations. So those are the two restrictions placed on the new the stimulus monies that the town will be receiving. Believe, and other than that, I don't even believe it's as restrictive as the CARES Act money that we received. If you recall, the CARES Act money we had to really dedicate towards public safety. and specifically police personnel costs. And there's, I don't see that same even level of restriction on these monies. The two primary restrictions, they can't be used to cut taxes, and they can't be used for pension obligations. That's what I'm seeing or hearing.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Okay. Commissioners, do you have any other questions for Wendy? With that, thank you very much, Wendy. Appreciate your very good presentation, as usual. Very comprehensive. Appreciate it. Next, we have on the agenda two related items. Number three, which we'll discuss a continuation of discussion with the consultants that have been supporting us in this work. And then we have a discussion on possible recommendation on drafting a new pension funding policy. And I'm going to go back to you, Commissioner Newell. Wanted to bring up some points, and do you want to do that at this time, or is it more reflective?
I think this is okay. I just wanted to make sure that as we've that all these options that we're looking at, I think we discussed last time that when we talk about, in addition to the ARC being held, that part of it was continuing our policy of maintaining the current alternate contribution rate that is currently here. And that was, I believe, confirmed by our consultants, that all of these plans in working in conjunction together, you assume that we were going to continue to pay an additional 30.38% above the employer net cost as we're currently doing now moving forward. And I just wanted to confirm that that was in the case, and if I'm correct in remembering that, that it is listed in the summaries of the listing of the agenda. If you remember that when we set the policy last year, that was one of the ways that we talked about trying to catch up those payments. And if we were to make in a very large lump sum or take in a bond issuance, and our policy in general terms talked about making an additional $1.5 million contribution, I think the intention from our last meeting was to also include and hold the ACR rate at its current levels, which are 30 point some percent. Am I correct in remembering that?
From my perspective, yes. I assume that I just presumed, based on what was sent out, that that was the case. But David, let me throw it back to you and confirm that that's a good presumption.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Newell. That your comments are spot on. None of the options that were presented either at the last meeting last week or that are presented this evening contemplate any sort of reduction in the proposed or estimated both the normal cost component of the contribution from the employer or the amortization of the unfunded liability. So we're including what is estimated over the next 16 years, or in some actually longer than that, but over the next 16 years, certainly in all of these scenarios, they're absolutely the same in terms of the employer cost component. They don't contemplate a reduction of the unfunded, the amortized unfunded liability or the normal cost, which would both together collectively comprise the total employer contribution.
Right. I just want to make sure that is oftentimes people, when they look at the agenda, they're not necessarily looking as deep as we are looking at all the individual pieces of the numbers. And I just, depending on which option we move at, the additional, holding the ACR rate at 30 point whatever percent, some ways would be larger than the piece of additional contribution rate beyond the ACR that we're talking about. There's not savings there. It's not like we're going to make a prepayment and then save money. We're anticipating all of these are anticipating holding that additional $2 million payment in the ACR rate above what it would normally be reset down to moving forward. And I just want to make sure that when we're including summaries or explaining what we're discussing, that it's very clear that that policy that we talked about last year is directly stated is that so that people understand that it's not a savings that we're including in, into whatever solution we're funding here.
Wondering, can we, depending on what option that we go with, maybe I'd like to discuss that. I certainly agree with what's being said, but I think depending on what option we go to, maybe there might be a, there could be a possible change if you agree to it, but I'd like to discuss that a little bit once we get down to what option we think we're going with.
Yes. But to be clear, Commissioner Knowles, I'm hearing from Mr. Gephardt that we do have that included in our calculations at the moment, and we'll move on to number three so that we can find out if that's accurate. So I'm going to ask Allison if she wouldn't mind reading in item number three on our agenda.
Agenda item three, presentation, discussion, and potential recommendation on PSPRS liability funding options.
All right, at this point, I'm going to turn the floor over to you, Mr. Gephardt, and if you could reintroduce our consultants and guests, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you once again, members of the Commission. My memorandum before you this evening is a little bit, I apologize, a little bit incomplete. I had composed it prior to some discussions, some late breaking discussions that we had with our consultants. I think I mentioned that we were going to present three options for your consideration this evening. We actually have four. And so we'll go ahead and discuss those in a few moments. But I wanted to, again, reintroduce Bill Siegenthaler, who's our consultant with CBIZ. Him and his team, Tom Menny and you, are with us again this evening. So they'll be kind of leading us through a short presentation explaining those four options, what's included in them, the pros and cons, et cetera. And then we'll turn it over and have some discussion, hopefully, and a recommendation from you and the Commission. So with that, Bill, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Dave, thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. We appreciate the opportunity to meet with you again. And as Dave mentioned, we want to run through an updated presentation, which hopefully you can see on your screen now. This is an update to the presentation that we provided last week and incorporates the input from the commission last week, as well as further discussions with both Dave and Mary regarding looking at the various alternatives that we believe would be most advantageous for the town. So with that, I'll walk through the presentation, and please, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to interrupt at any time, and we will certainly have discussion after the presentation as well. Just in the way of background, if you look at your screen, the first two items were two of the alternatives that we showed last week. And these two appeared to be those that were of most interest to the commission and that the
Bill, just to stop you there, I don't see the screen. I don't know if anyone else is seeing your screen.
I don't see it either.
No. Okay.
So if you could share, that would be great.
Okay. Let me try this again.
There you go.
There we go.
Okay, Bill, that looks like it's working.
Okay. Can everyone see it now?
Yep.
Right. The wonders of technology. So, again, the first two alternatives were discussed last week, seemed to have some interest and seemed to meet certain of the objectives of the town and the commission and have been incorporated into this updated presentation. Alternatives three and four are new alternatives, which again reflect the input of the commission as well as discussions with Dave and Mary since the meeting last week. Alternative three is a combination of both a significant initial contribution of $5 million, a $500,000 annual additional contribution each year, and then an assumption of $17 million of a debt issuance. Alternative four is another new alternative, also includes a significant contribution, in this case, $10 million, and also the a debt issuance of $17 million, but no annual additional contribution. So the feeling was, based on the input we received last week, and again, the ongoing discussions, that these four alternatives were those that best reflected the objectives and the interests of the town and the council. And that kind of leads into the next slide, where we tried to summarize at a high level what some of the key objectives were from our discussions. Number one was the fact that achieving 70% funding by 2024 and ultimately potentially up to 100% funding of the unfunded pension liability by 2036. And that would take place in stages from 70 to 80% to 90%, and 100% is what we included. It doesn't affect the calculations, but that was the intent in terms of looking at the objective in terms of the percentage funding of the unfunded liability. The other thing, the objective that came across, I think, clearly was that we want to minimize the net present value of the contributions to the pension plan, and we have performed a calculation for each of the alternatives and reflect you know, what those net present value amounts are and which alternatives represent the lowest net present value to the town. And then the third objective is understanding that there was a concern by the commission and the town regarding the burden of future additional contributions beyond your minimum required contribution and the cash flow impact of that on future on the future town councils, that there was a concern that that the current town council would not want to place a burden on future town councils by requiring additional contributions every year if possible. So we did look at that as one of our objectives in evaluating the four alternatives. The key assumptions, again, this is something we talked about at the last meeting, and we wanted to clarify those assumptions. As we just discussed, all four alternatives assume that the minimum required contribution will continue every year for each of the alternatives. We're also assuming a all-in cost for a debt issuance of 2.75%, which is reflective of recent issues by other municipalities within the state. The earnings rate that we felt represented a conservative rate, more conservative than the current actuarial projections that we use for all four alternatives was 5.3%. And we also used that same 5.3% where we did debt issuances. And we're not presenting this tonight, but our plan was if an alternative is selected, which includes debt issuance, we would stress that debt issuance at multiple earnings rates, specifically the 5.3%, but also assuming a lower earnings rate of 3.3% and then a higher earnings rate at 7.3%, just to give the commission and the town council some understanding as to if in fact the earnings rate is not at the 5.3% level, what it would look like at a lower level and a higher level. And then the last key assumption is that the debt term would be 20 years with the debt fully amortizing over that 20-year period. So there are many assumptions, but they're the key assumptions that affect the alternatives, particularly the last two reflect the debt alternatives. And these are the ones that came up in our discussions a week ago that we wanted to spell out and make sure they're clear to all the members of the commission. So with that, I'm going to run through the alternatives. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on alternatives one and two because these are exactly the same as we saw last time. The only addition is we have calculated net present values for all four alternatives, which we did not present last week. And the net present value for a alternative where you would make the minimum required or baseline contribution plus an additional annual contribution of $2.5 million, that particular alternative would have a net present value of $25.4 million, which turns out that's the highest net present value of the four alternatives that we looked at. Alternative two, again, this was presented last time, and the net present value in this case is lower. It turns out to be $19.9 million, so it is a lower net present value than alternative one, which is the, additional $2.5 million contributions. In this case, alternative two is a significant contribution of $10 million and an annual $1.5 million additional contribution. And that has a lower net present value of $19.9 million. So from a net present value perspective, more favorable than alternative one. Alternative three is what we referred to last week as one of the hybrids, hybrid in the sense that it includes debt as well as contributions. Alternative three, which is again a new alternative, which was not presented last week, but based on the input we received, seemed to be of interest to the commission and certainly to the town staff that we spoke with. This provides for a significant contribution of $5 million, an annual additional contribution of $500,000, and a debt issuance of $17 million. As all the other alternatives, it does result by 2036 in achieving 100% funding of the unfunded liability. The net present value of this alternative is actually lower by roughly $1 million than alternative number two, and does, as you can see from the pros and cons, offers certain advantages to the town in that there's a lower cash outflow in later years because of the debt issuance and the significant contribution of $5 million. There still is an ongoing requirement in terms of the $500,000. But as I mentioned, it does represent a lower net present value than either alternative one or alternative two. And I'll contrast number three with alternative four, which is, again, we're referring to this as a hybrid because it does include contributions as well as debt. Number four provides for a significant contribution of $10 million as opposed to $5 million in alternative three, a debt issuance of $17 million, and no annual additional contribution. So therefore, no future burden imposed on future town councils in terms of an ongoing additional contribution. As it turns out, this alternative has the lowest net present value, which is $15.9 million. Again, as the other alternatives, does achieve 100% funding of the unfunded actual liability by 2036, and has, you know, several advantages in terms of reducing the outflow in later years. There's no ongoing additional contribution. And as I mentioned before, it also represents the lowest net present value. So alternatives three and four, including debt, do allow the town to achieve a lower net present value than alternatives one and two. And our recommendation, considering the items we just mentioned, we're actually suggesting there's, of the four, we think two of the alternatives are the most attractive to the town. Alternatives two and four, two does not involve any debt. It achieves the same funding level as alternative four, but it does not have the lower net present value of the $15.9 million of alternative four, which is the hybrid. It has a higher net present value, and it does include alternative two does include a annual additional contribution of $1.5 million, which is not the case with alternative four. So from a purely financial perspective, and we know the commission and the town have other considerations that need to be made, we feel that two or four represent the most attractive. From a pure net present value perspective, alternative four is the most attractive. And the only reason we suggest that the town might want to consider alternative two is, they're depending on the risk appetite of the town council and also certain concerns that some municipalities have regarding debt issuances. We suggest that alternative two might be another possibility, but from a pure financial standpoint, alternative four does appear to be the most financially attractive to the council. So in summary, we feel that those two alternatives are the most advantageous and are the ones that we would suggest be given consideration. So, with that, I'll close my discussion and please let me know if anyone has any comments or questions.
Can you give us what the debt service would be for the debt issuances?
Yep.
The level of debt service?
Right. Well, your annual debt service payments, what would they be?
I would say. Look, I can actually, if you'd like, I can actually pull up for models for alternatives three and four.
Yes.
Sure.
It's a good question, Commissioner Mason. I happened to ask that of Dave Gephardt as well.
Like mine.
It's about $1.1 million.
A year.
So it's basically a mortgage.
A year. Mm-hmm.
That's for both. It's both $17 million, right? So that's,
yeah. Right.
That's correct.
But with alternative four, the $1.1 million, if we don't have to pay that $500,000, that would be part of the contribution or part of, you know, what we've been planning for in our forecast for the payment of the debt. But yeah, we got to find another $600,000.
Well, that's what I was wondering is, well, if we leave the contribution rate at whatever we are, 41 now, so that 500,000 or whatever annual payment is in addition to paying that contribution rate. Is that correct? The assumption right now is, right?
Okay.
I'm sorry. I missed that question.
So what I'm saying, if we, like we talked earlier, if we maintain the 41% contribution rate total, that additional 500,000 or whatever additional amount is in addition to what we're already putting on the unfunded amount. So that's
correct.
We maintain 41 and we add an additional payment on top of that.
Right. That additional debt service would be additional cash outflow. But that would be countered also by the earnings that you're realizing on the debt issuance and the spread between the cost of the debt issuance of approximately 2.75% and earnings that we're assuming of 5.3%.
So just so I have it right, so the proceeds from the debt issuance and as well as the whatever money we put down up front, is that going in, are we investing that separately? Or are we giving that to PSPRS?
We didn't make any assumption in terms of where those funds would be held. I think that was discussed at the last meeting. And I think for simplicity purposes, we just assume that those funds would be within the plan and not separately invested. Right. And we're simply assuming a 5.3% earnings rate, but didn't specifically assume how those funds would be invested. We just assumed a rate.
Is that a 5.3 investment return that PSPRS is going to get?
Well, if the funds, you know, were placed with them, you know, we're using that as a projected earnings rate. Obviously, the actual earnings rate will be hopefully higher for everyone's sake, but we have a conservative rate of 5.3% for our earnings, for all earnings assumptions, both for debt as well as the existing contributions to the plan.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I had understanding of that. Thank you.
Before we take any more questions, let me just jump in here for a second, please. I'd like to open up the floor to any of our members of the public in the audience, and I haven't been keeping track, so I don't know if that's happened yet or not, but in terms of whether we have members. So I'm going to, at this time, ask that anybody in the audience who would like to raise a comment or make a point about our discussion that we've had so far, this would be your opportunity to do so, and please raise your hand at this time. I am not seeing any. Allison, help me out. I'm not sure but I'm presuming there's none.
I'm not showing anybody raising their hands either, Mr. Chair.
And I seem to recall we do not have anybody on the phone.
We do not.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that opportunity was there. people are looking to make. And so with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to the commissioners, and Commissioner Beasley, I believe you were...
Bill, the question I have is, you list as a con being the risk of debt. So there's two potentials there. One con could be the differential between the earnings capability on that deposit and the cost of the debt. The second con could be formalizing the liability for that pension plan versus debt, which I sort of poo-poo because it's there anyways. And I think anyone who might do a credit rating has to recognize that unfunded liability. So what in reality is that con if the end result of that debt is creating discipline on the part of the town to doing the funding of this pension plan?
I think that's a great question. And the reason I put that in there, and I mention it obviously in the first bullet point, is we mentioned this here. I think you stated the issue quite correctly. Whether it's an unfunded pension liability or it's a debt issuance, it's still debt. I think that's absolutely the case. There is more of a, what I would say is a perception of risk related when you actually have a formal debt issuance versus an unfunded pension liability. You know, a perception of risk on the part of, you know, the residents of the town, on potentially in the part of the town council. You know, we have no knowledge of that, but we wanted to state it because when you're comparing a non-debt issuance alternative to a debt issuance alternative, there's a little bit of a perception difference when you look at a formal debt issuance, because at that point you're in effect you're kind of taking your actuarial unfunded liability and formalizing it into real debt, and you know that can have a perception from a pure net present values perspective. It doesn't matter, you know, because net present value doesn't consider perceptions. But yeah, I want to mention that just for the benefit of the commission, so that you know it is something that, you know, that we're aware is out there in terms of how municipalities view debt and how residents of municipalities view debt. You know, there's a perception of risk, but as you stated, it's whether it's a pension obligation or a certificate of participation or an unfunded actuarial pension liability, all three are debt. I mean, that is the reality. But there is a perception difference when you actually issue debt and you have a formal obligation to repay that debt.
So it's an education issue for the public as well as the county.
It's an education issue for a lot of people.
Yes, Kathy.
Did you say you had done some analysis regarding rate sensitivities? So for example, if you change the interest rates, what does that do to the potential net present value of the four alternatives?
We did, and we actually done it for alternative three. And I can pull up those numbers, but I can tell you off the top of my head, and Tom can speak to the numbers specifically. He probably has them memorized by now. When we
We Chuck, the income, when we go up or down 2 points, you're talking well over $100 million over compounding over 15 years. It's about a $40 million swing each way.
Wow.
If we only earn 3.3% for the next 15 years, we'd have about $45 million less. But if we earn 7.3 over the next 15 years, we'd have $45 million more. So there's going to be years where you're a little better and a little below the 5.3, but as a blended average projection, I think we feel pretty comfortable at the 5.3.
Okay.
I'd like to think it'll do better. I mean, I'd like to think everything does better than 5.3 over the next 15 years. But.
Yeah, we believe 5.3%, but, you know, 10 years ago, people thought 10% to 12% return was a reasonable return. And obviously, we're in a different world today than we were then. But I think the point responding to your question is, this really affects all the alternatives, but it particularly highlights the hybrid alternatives. When you have a fluctuation in the actual earnings, 2 points either way dramatically impacts the results. So that's something to bear in mind.
Okay, and then I had another question. The annual contributions, you're looking at 15 years to get to 2036. The debt service for the last two scenarios, does that $1.1 million in debt service extend beyond the window of the 15 years?
Yes, that extends the full. We took all our projections out to 2040.
Okay, so in scenarios one and two, you're there and done by 2036. You might be 100% hitting your unfunded liability by 2036, but in scenarios three and four, you still have an outstanding liability, is how I interpret that.
Right, you still have an outstanding liability, but the the funding beyond 2036 still is equal to or greater than 100%. So the two hybrids still are reasonable alternatives through 2040. We didn't just cut off the analysis at 2036. We took it through 2040, but we mentioned 2036 since this was a potential stated goal of achieving 100% funding.
Right, but but I guess my point being, you're still paying for this after 2036 because you're servicing the debt.
Yes, you are. That's correct.
Okay.
So I presume, I want to jump on Kathy's point there for a second. So I would presume then that from 2036 to 2040, you are still maintaining 100% funded liability.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's the assumption you did. So
yes, and our analysis supports that.
I got you. So when we come to number four on the agenda, we probably will need to have a discussion whether we change that that policy in the town. That's right. Well, we can have that. Yes, Commissioner Beasley.
The problem with one and two is that there's no guarantee in one or two that the town will maintain the discipline to fund the plan.
Yep.
As three and four, and if you look at present value, four being the better option, the discipline is booked in because you've got a mortgage that you're having to pay. And unfortunately, the town's history is that it doesn't have the discipline to do that funding. So that's an additional significant advantage to three or four versus one or two.
I agree.
I
think there's no, who knows how many town councils we'll have between now and when this is all over, and you've got a whole different group of potential council people with different agenda items, et cetera. And so the only way to guarantee, right, am I hearing this right? The only way to guarantee that it's paid is to do some sort of a debt issuance. Otherwise, I don't know that you can force their hand and require them to pay. Is that true, Mary?
If we are looking at, I mean, first of all, I want to speak for all previous councils and all future councils. I have not in my career worked with a council that doesn't obviously take into consideration any financial concerns or issues. They always have, and yes, they have different expectations in terms of perceptions, but you know, I continue to believe that any future Oro Valley Council would certainly see the importance of needing to address this. But yes, there's more than one way to skin a cat, for sure. The benefit of the 3 and 4, as was mentioned by Commissioner Beasley and all of the members of the commission, is that this gets the monkey off our back. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, it does so at a cost. I mean, let's not, you know, it's not like it's free money. I mean, if this were free, we would have done it a long time ago, right? So there is certainly a, you know, an impact, but what scenario 4 does is it allows us to use the $500,000 that we're already contributing. Okay. We happen to have, as you saw from Wendy's presentation, we happen to be projecting about $12 million in excess reserves. If that didn't happen because of previous councils and conservative budgeting and, of course, our recent increase, we wouldn't have those kinds of resources, and we wouldn't be talking about scenario 4 with a $10 million investment. We probably also wouldn't be talking about it if we didn't know that we were going to get this $11 million from the federal government over the next 2 years that will help us with our ongoing capital issues. So we are, in fact, in a very unique situation that we weren't in 2 years ago to be able to consider this kind of an option. And using then our $500,000 that we've been contributing to the PSPRS as an additional contribution toward instead a debt issuance and making up the difference, I think is certainly a wise move on our part. And again, we're in a position that we didn't have available to us even as early as last year. And so I think that the beauty of option 4 particularly is that future councils won't have to worry about this, that they'll be able to simply continue to pay that 41.5%, almost 42%, pay the debt issuance for the 20 years. Yeah, it'll go 3 years beyond, but that's okay. We can manage that. And if, as we all hope, the interest rate is better than the conservative 5.3, then what that will do in, let's say, you know, we'll do an evaluation over the next 5 or 6 or 10 years to see how we're doing, then we could see potentially that 42% get reduced, which would then free that money up to either go toward the debt payment or available to the town for ongoing operations. So, I mean, I think all in all, number 4 does seem to be an attractive thing based on our current circumstances. And certainly as Dave and I have talked about it, it seems to make sense at this point in time.
So I have to tell you, Mary, that one of the questions I wrote down this past weekend is, what does Mary and Dave recommend? So I think I'm getting my answer pretty clearly. So you feel number four represents the best alternative to recommend to the council?
I do.
Yes, Commissioner Leesden.
I really don't want to be a prognosticator of earnings, but 5.3% is a pretty conservative number. And it's certainly a better number than the 7.3 in terms of the potential for not just earnings in the portfolio, but where liabilities are going. Liabilities right now for us are kind of running out of control relative to what our earnings are. So we can get rid of the liabilities and potentially reap some benefits associated with earnings, whether they're 5.3% or potentially higher. So I really think that it's a pretty conservative assumption. And I think a great opportunity for the town, particularly when you look at any kind of historical cost of money. Your debt issuance at 2.75% is almost a steal as you look back, you know, historically. Not that history is going to dictate the future, but I think when you consider budget deficits on the federal level, we're likely to see rising interest rates. We've already seen some, but we'll see rising interest rates that are going to make the 2.75%. I mean, look like a real deal, I think, a few years from now. Obviously, it's all speculation, but an opinion for whatever it's worth.
Mr. Gebhardt, you had your hand raised, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would just echo everything that Commissioner Beasley just said. I agree with all of that. I think when we look at the 5.3%, it is intentionally conservative. We recognize that. We certainly don't want to be disappointed in the future with the return on the plan's investments. With that said, there are other types of assumptions that the actuaries have that could also be changed moving forward that could impact that liability. So as we look at balancing the impact of those actuarial assumptions continually being ratcheted to have an adverse impact on the liability, and balancing that with hopefully increased returns in the investments of the plan, I think this is option four is a very balanced scenario from a risk standpoint for the town. So I just wanted to throw that in. Yes, the investment return on the plan's investment, that is a very critical factor, but there are other things that, other actuarial issues like the 3% that's assumed in payroll growth over time in their model that they're talking about taking that down, I believe, a quarter of a percent per year until it finally gets down to zero. That also could impact that liability calculation. So I just want to throw that out there that to not get so focused on the investment return, that 5.3%, that is intentionally, hopefully, providing a buffer against other types of actions that the plan may take or the actuaries may take.
So, yes, thanks for that comment, Ed. So, if I take number four, then really what we're looking at here is that on an annual basis, we'll be paying $1.1 million in debt service. And let's go, where are we at here? Okay. $1.1 million in debt service, in addition to the current rates that we're applying to payroll. Just so I can be clear, and do we continue the $500,000 that's in the current policy?
Right.
Yeah.
We do.
Not for four.
That's not part of
current.
That's not
number
four.
Correct.
Okay. So just the 1.1 million would be in addition to what we are charging the rates, and that'll be for the next 20 years.
Right.
Okay.
Really an incremental 600,000 over what we're currently contemplating being $500,000 extra per year.
Right. Commissioner Mason?
I guess what we're saying is, you're comfortable, the city's comfortable with a $10 million payment out of their reserves. And I'm assuming you could use some of that $11 million you get by paying something else in the town and then using that to put forward. So I guess that you're comfortable with reducing your reserves by $10 million, you know, for a year or two. And then also the additional budget for the debt service, that won't be an issue as well then. That's basically what we're saying if we go with option four.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Mason, one thing that I just wanted to point out is we're not tapping into the official reserves. Our 25% remains intact. The council's policy says that any excess reserves over the 25% in the general fund must be applied either to capital projects or PSPRS unfunded liability. And so that's exactly what we're going to be doing with these excess reserves, is dedicating a good chunk, what we estimate to be $10 million of a $12.2 million, $12.5 million expected. And remember, we use those excess reserves every year. We haven't had to. We got the 5.3 last year, right, and the CARES Act dollars. And so, you know, over 3 years, we will have gotten $15 million that frees up, you know, the need to spend from, you know, those federal dollars. We're not spending the federal dollars. We're spending our own dollars on it and still being able to meet our capital needs. Since these are, in fact, one-time dollars, as the community dictates. So
we're basically using the unassigned, whatever we have in unassigned.
That's correct.
Not touch the $10 million contingency at all then.
That's exactly correct, yes.
Thank you.
I think you're in, like Mary said, a unique situation. I'm pretty sure not every town has this ability to even make these decisions. And I think you are in a almost a perfect storm of being able to do it. As far as the $10 million go, I'm hearing that, yes, that's affordable. And yes, we're in a good position to do that. So that brings us to options two and four. And now I'm struggling a little bit with the debt versus the non-debt. You know, it's either, you know, your additional cash flow is either $1.5 million or it's the one for 15 years or 1.1 million for 20 years, but the 1.1 million for 20 years just goes into the budget and we never really have to look at it again is what I'm hearing you say, versus in option two, the 1.5 million, it really is a decision every single year in that it is a budgeted item that will get discussed and talked about and voted on. Whereas the debt is once you issue the debt, it's just becomes part of, you know, what every year it's an obligation. You have to pay it. I'm also like the fact that the rate for the debt is so low. And I feel like, you know, that's another one of those kind of perfect storm situations where it you're never going to get it lower than it is probably. So that kind of leads me toward liking number four. I'm a little bit, I definitely like the 10 million and I'm kind of not sure about the, which makes more sense, but I'm leaning toward four.
And if I may just add, you know, hypothetically, let's just say for a moment that, you know, tragically the interest rate is at 5% instead of 5.3 or whatever it is. even if we get close to our 20-year mark, we're going to be a heck of a lot closer to 100% than we are right now. And so even if at that time, because remember, if that happens, that's not going to just happen for us. That's going to be happening for pension systems all over. That will be a much smaller gap 15 years from now to have to overcome with a much more manageable approach if we have to go from 93 to 100% or something like that as we go through. So, you know, no matter what, that $10 million injection is definitely, that is part of the reason why that the net present value is the lowest in that particular situation. And so, you know, using that contribution, I think is appropriate. And from an ongoing cost perspective, you know, $1.5 million versus 1.1 is not insignificant in terms of ongoing cash contribution.
Will these payment, will the debt issuance and the reserve, if we go with four, will that come out of FY22, or will we start it in 21?
We'll budget it for next fiscal year. First of all, we don't have $17 million in budget capacity to be able to issue the debt. We can do all the preparation ahead of time so that we could be ready to go, but it has to be included in the capacity, so it would have to wait until after July
1. Okay.
So you're saying, Mary, that we can't issue the debt until after July 1?
Afraid not. We don't have the cap in our budget to be able to, because we hadn't planned on this level of that $17 million. So we wouldn't be able to budget it unless we have the cap.
There's no feasible way to have the council allow for some adjustments like that, because between now and July.
It's a pesky little state law issue. It's a pesky little state law issue. The council would do it tomorrow.
So it's just state law dictated. Mm-hmm. Okay. Too bad.
I know. I get it.
Okay.
You're concerned, Jim, about the interest rates rising? Is that...
Well, we may be talking dimes and nickels, but the 10-year treasury rate, as an example, has gone from 0.9% to 1.6% from January 1 until today. So, you're a victim of the markets in terms of what they are doing. And wouldn't it all surprise me if those interest rates kept going up, maybe not quite at that rate. But...
And so I think we heard from Tom there that if we move one direction or the other, there's an impact of how much money per percent?
Yeah, each 2 points was a... 2 points each way was about $45 million each direction. But that is over a very long period of time, over an awful lot of money. So.
It is what it is.
Well, I think we probably have captured the essence of what the alternatives are providing. If we just looked at 2 and 4, and Kathy, you sort of said the same thing that I'm just going to say, is do we want to fix this in for the next 20 years, or do we want to leave it susceptible to decisions made annually? It's kind of, I mean, the numbers are the numbers. I mean, the finances aren't going to change perceptibly, despite even interest rates going potentially up. So I don't think we're going to come out with different numbers. So the question is probably going to be put forward to the council is do you want to lock this in? Just like when you get your refinance, do you want to lock it in or leave it open? And at this point, number 2 and number 4 both lock it in. The $10 million is paid and it's gone, and then you have debt versus the annual contribution. So number four, if you go back and look at that, and see if I have this in correctly, but you really have committed. I mean, this is locked in, and this is going to go out the door, and that's it. The only downside to that is, well, there might be some others, but at the moment, we don't know all of the inputs to the equation. For example, we don't know what's going to happen with labor, the number of people who will be eligible for this, what the program for retirement plan will be for these folks. You've got a lot of, and there's no way that I can think of to quantify that, but this is something that could change the dynamic of the numbers when you go out 10, 15 years and you look back. I'm not sure how you can put that in there, but you just have to recognize that we don't control all of the inputs there. That when you look at it from a long-term basis, going out 15, 20 years, maybe in a different environment than where we are now. And some people will say, well, that'd be great, but, you know, that's something we have to be aware of. Yes, Jim?
I think one of the things that we have to also rely on a bit is that the net present value analysis on this shows that number four, in fact, is the best for the city. And will that number change? Absolutely. But you have to do this analysis based on a snapshot, I think. And that snapshot seems to show it to be the best arrangement for the city, and the city can afford it.
Mm-hmm. All right. I recognize that I am raising intangibles that are going to be difficult to quantify and don't fit well into a long-term financial analysis. But I'm hearing from all of the parties here, and let me see if we can bring this to a decision point. Then of the four, you know, we looked at six models to begin with last week. We indicated that four of them were not acceptable. We came back with two plus two new ones. Based on the financial analysis performed, we're indicating that alternative option number four would be the best option to propose to the council. And that number four would be a contribution of $10 million and an issuance of debt totaling $17 million. Oh, I know. Question real quickly on the $17 million. Typically, pension obligation bonds have to be taxable, non-callable. Do we have to issue the $17 million as pension obligation bonds, or can we issue them under another type, such as general obligation or certificates of participation? I guess that's a question for David.
Yeah, Chair Latchford, members of the commission, thank you for that question. It's a really good one. There are only two options really available to the town. One, as you mentioned, is a certificate of participation, which is basically, and that's the option that City of Tucson is utilizing. But I don't view it as favorable for the town, but basically what happens with the certificate of participation is that town-owned assets are essentially deeded over and leased back on behalf of the town. So that's the collateral, essentially, the assets of the town. Usually it's police facilities or, general government buildings or just, you know, general assets of the town that would collateralize that debt. The other option, of course, is just kind of a standard bond issuance that would be repaid through excise taxes. So it would be an excise tax bond issuance. This is typically the type of structure that the town has utilized for debt. It doesn't require going out for voter approval or anything like that. The third option, of course, is a general obligation bond, but that would require voter approval. And typically a GO bond, I think in all cases, a GO bond is repaid through property taxes, which the town doesn't currently have. So that option doesn't seem as feasible. So I think really what we're looking at here are two primary options, either an excise tax bond issuance or a certificate of participation. And my recommendation would be the excise tax bond issuance.
And so that reflects what we've got into the analysis here.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, the analysis really doesn't make a recommendation as to what type of debt structure is entered into on behalf of the town. It doesn't make a recommendation or an inference as to whether the funds are invested with the plan or there's a separate trust set up or established. The numbers are the numbers irrespective of what type of debt structure is contemplated.
So we're not talking material.
And just one other thing I'll just add on there, just because I mentioned it at the last commission meeting, and I'll just mention it again just to keep, so that we're all on the same page here. This would have to be a taxable issuance. It would not be a tax exempt issue because it would be taxable. There would not be any sort of arbitrage rebate calculations that would be necessary in the future.
Correct. Yep, I remember that well. Yes.
Okay, John, I'd like to jump in here. I have a question of our consultant team that'll lead to some others. Was there any evaluation of increasing the size of the bond and what that would do and allow us to have some freedom to reduce the ACR that we're going to overpay on a yearly basis?
It's not a scenario that we were given assumptions.
You're probably looking at alternative four.
Four, that's correct.
In particular. The short answer is no. We did not look at a higher debt issuance in conjunction with the significant contribution of $10 million, that is certainly something that we could look at. But this model, this particular alternative, came up fairly late in the process, so we did not have the opportunity to do a lot of what if type analysis. But what we can say, and I'll turn this over to Tom for his comments as well, is that it appeared that this combination of significant contribution and debt issuance was a very efficient and obviously from a net present value standpoint, a very attractive way to fund the liability. But we did not look at higher debt issuances and lower significant contributions, if that's what you're referring to.
I'm referring to just the, again, since our assumption one, which I would prefer had be included in these slides of how we're going to move through one through four when they're presented as options, just because I want to make sure that assumption is made very clear to the people voting on this, is that the implementation of number four is going to have a significant cash infusion into our account in fiscal year 2022. We're going to get a report at the end of the year from PSPRS. It's going to report that we're funded at a very high rate, probably slightly over 100%. Somewhere very close to that would be my assumption based on their models. And they're going to give us a bill for resetting our ACR down to something much lower. And the council is going to have to understand that even though they've going to make the debt payment and they've made the significant contribution, they're going to overpay their ACR by more than $1 million than they would have to in order to keep the, to make this plan feasible. I think of the four presented here, this is the correct option to go, but I want to make it very clear that this option includes that we're going to get a bill in the year that says we're 100% funded, great job. And then we're going to choose, the way this works is by choosing to keep that ACR funded in over the 30% rate. And then knowing that that's going to account for the future underperformance of the PSPRS board. I just want to make sure that we have way that it's clearly communicated so that we're including that in our communication to council and how the public understands this, is that we're going to make a large contribution. It's going to say that we're 100% funded or close to it, and we're still going to overpay using our same payroll rate that we have today in order to keep it there moving forward.
That's correct. And that was really our intent of assumption number one.
Exactly. I just think that when key assumption number one, I would feel more comfortable when presenting this to a public, an elected official, is to make sure it, that current required contribution is also in what option one is, what option two is, what option three is, what option four is, and with an understanding of what the size of that dollar value is on a yearly basis. I don't want someone to say they didn't understand or they didn't know that they thought this was going to solve it all. Why are we still paying an additional $1.6 million? We did everything we thought we were supposed to do when we issued the bond. Why do we have this other payment? I want to make it very clear from the start that these options all require that additional payment, maybe give an estimate of, you know, how big that payment was this year, and just put it out there in the front that this is part of the solution and that none of these solutions work without that continued yearly that yearly overpayment that we're going to accomplish by holding our current ECR rate.
Okay, point well taken.
Yeah, we would also put it in the policy, I would assume, just to lock it in.
Exactly.
Right.
So if you look at, I'm sorry. I was going to say, if you look at the $10 million and the $17 million, I'm trying to understand the mechanics of it. At what point in time would we be writing them a check for $10 million and then the debt is issued and they get the proceeds from the debt? How does all that work and the timing of that?
Question for David.
Yeah, thank you, Vice Chair Salverson, Chair, members of the Commission. So the timing, you know, we would certainly remit the funds if that was obviously direction from the council. We would remit the funds as soon as they, and in fact, I'm not exactly, because this is a little bit new to me, I'm not exactly sure whether those funds would even come to our account or whether they would, the proceeds from the debt issuance would go directly to PSPRS. So, and I'm guessing that that might be the case with this. But obviously it would depend on council direction, as I mentioned, whether we were going to set up a trust, which again, I think we had that discussion last week. That's not something I would necessarily recommend just because the amount of our debt issuance is so small. I think there's just too much risk for that small of an issuance. If you're talking about the size of City of Tucson and they're issuing hundreds of millions of dollars, then I think that might become a better option or solution for them. Certainly they have trust issues with the plan and how it's invested their resources. I think in terms of timing, it all depends. We could get this thing, we could have it all spooled up, get it issued right after the first of the year. I did raise my hand earlier Commissioner Beasley was making the comment about whether we could even issue debt this year. We're going trying to look at all options. So that's my commitment to you and to the town, certainly, is that if there's a way that we can either do a budget amendment or, you know, whatever that looks like, if there's a way that we can squeeze this in, squeeze the debt issuance into this fiscal year, we will certainly take a look at that. It's possible and probably probable that that's not likely to happen, but I don't want to close the door on that without having that discussion with our bond counsel and our underwriters, and just making sure that door has been completely shut to us as an option. So I think in terms of the funding of this, we would fund it at the beginning of the year, the $10 million, the beginning of the fiscal year, the $10 million, and then as soon as that bond issuance, those proceeds were funded, those funds would go to the PSPRS immediately, so that we could take advantage of of the entire year's worth of earnings over next fiscal year, and not try to structure it on a monthly basis or anything like that. I think, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Good, thank you.
Back to Commissioner Newell's point, well taken, David Gephardt. Would putting, or maybe this is for Bill as well, just to make sure that everybody is on the same page when it does get to the council, could we put a chart in there that shows the 20 years and what the cash impacts are for those 20 years? So that you could see that in year one, you've got $10 million going out. Year two, you've got, and then identify the different flows, but you got $1.1 million, and I'm making numbers up, I think I'm close, but debt service. Then you have the UAAL contribution through, so that everybody sees all the elements on how this sausage was built, or made, whatever you call it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, absolutely, we can include that as an addendum to the policy and have that discussion in the next agenda.
Commissioner Newell, do you have other questions?
No, that I think the summation of my questions of whether or not we'd looked at over bonding and to lower the future ACR contributions was asked and answered, as well as I think it's understood that we're going to have in that table of chart, maybe an estimate of what the PSPRS is going to say we're funded at, so that just people understand that even though it says after the bond proceeds get put in the account, it says we're 100% funded. We understand that we're going to still make these extra payments in order to produce where we're going to be and need to be by state law.
Okay. Let me bring this to see if we can bring it to a decision point now. It seems to be from both the commission and staff perspective that alternative option four makes the best case for making a recommendation to the council for their decision. And to that end, if we are there, I'd like to have someone make that motion to recommend option number four.
So moved.
And that was made by Mike, is it? Jim, okay.
I'll second that.
Okay. Well, you guys look alike, so what? My fault.
I think they just insulted you, Mike.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so we have before us a motion to approve and recommend to the council option number four. And may I have a vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? By hearing none, motion passes. So that concludes number three. We're going to move on to number four. And Allison, if you'd be kind enough to read that into the minutes.
Agenda item four, discussion and possible recommendation of draft PSPRS pension funding policy for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2022.
Okay. So this is where we need to take option number four and put it into the policy to put forward to the council. Ideally, I'd like to be able to highlight the changes that we would be making, that we would be recommending to make to the policy should the council concur. That being the case, how about if I let David Gebhardt sort of take the lead on this, if you don't mind, David, and taking a look at what we have in option four, what will change in the policy? In the packet, you sent us a proposed policy, funding policy for the coming year. And why don't you go ahead and start taking your, and let us know where the changes would be.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So at this point, after a recommendation, thank you for that, to go to town council, I kind of wanted to just get this conversation started because this is obviously something that that needs to be completed for next fiscal year. You know, that's via our ARSs by state law that we have to update this pension funding policy on an annual basis. And I didn't have a sense of that prior to, because we hadn't, you know, had the discussion on the option. So all this is very intentional. What you have before you this evening is basically the same policy that we are in this current fiscal year, but it's got the updated actuarial numbers and percentages included as tables in the policy. There's a, you know, I think in terms of updates that you may want to consider. Again, these are not necessarily recommendations. These are just ideas at this point. But as we look at option four, you know, I think one of the concerns of Commissioner Newell and several of you is what holds future council's feet to the fire, even in terms of making that annual required contribution. I think the current policy addresses that, that we will not, even if we're overfunded, we will not dial down our annual required contributions to the plan. So I think we're hopefully covered there. But if you want stronger language, then I'm certainly open to making those changes. Additionally, I kind of wanted to bring up maybe. And the best way I can think about this is maybe a corridor type of scenario here, because I don't know that it's in the best interest of the town for us to be overfunded to a great degree, and I don't know what that great degree is. So, but I'm thinking maybe like 110%. If we're 110% funded, which, you know, under option four, we get up, I believe, to 103% funded as a maximum. We never really even come close to approaching that 110% funded figure. At what point do we, if we're 110% funded or 115, again, I don't know what that number is, but at what point then do we consider dialing back our annual required contribution? I think that has to be looked at as part of the policy. I don't know, you know, again, this is maybe not even a something that needs to be considered for this upcoming fiscal year, because I don't think that's going to be an issue. But it's just something to think about. And then also maybe requiring similarly a minimum required funding level that we're not going to allow our pension, our PSPRS plan to drop below 90% or drop below 80%. Again, depending on what happens, that will take remediate or corrective action if we drop below a certain funding level, so we don't get back down to the 70 or 60% funding level that we've been at. So these are just ideas and concept thoughts. Again, I don't know how impactful they are to the pension policy for next fiscal year, but again, just kind of wanted to get the conversation rolling and kind of get your juices flowing so that we can, so I can entertain those thoughts that you have on different types of amendments to the policy for next year. Thank you.
Okay, Jim?
David, one way maybe of getting at that is to put in a statement of the maintenance of the 100% funding ratio. And then that gives you some flexibility, maybe a little bit on the upside and the downside, but it makes it very clear that the commission recommendation is the anticipation of maintaining that funded ratio once you're there.
Okay, I like that idea. Thank you, Commissioner.
So how that would actually fall into the policy, Jim, you're saying? You'd actually
that would fall into the policy, yeah. And maybe it needs to get inserted somewhere around where we are targeting to make sure that the policy, the funds are fully funded by 2036. But maybe the statement is once fully funded, the anticipation is the maintenance of that funding.
I think we ought to show the 41% in there so it's very clear what, and then your maintenance could get into adjusting that one way or another, depending on if you're over 100 or under 100.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that. I want to be clear, though, that we are talking about a council policy. So the strength of that policy will be as the council wants to enforce it. And we've already talked about that future councils may have different priorities. We don't know. I'm just suggesting. So we can put it in there and make sure that it's some posterity for historical sake that this is how we got there. And I'm not sure that you can restrict it.
I mean, they obviously can change that policy every year to their desire, but I do think we need to find a way of trying to maintain the discipline once we've issued that debt and once we put that additional funding into the policy or into the investment portfolio. It would be a crying shame not to maintain it.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to go back.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. We are talking about a council policy. David, do you have your hand up, or is that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Beasley. So just a question on that. So if we did, and again, I'm kind of spitballing here, because I don't think this is going to be an issue. Maybe I don't even need to bring this up, but if we did get to 110% funded or 115% funded because investment returns, and I don't think this is going to happen, but we always have to have, you know, contingency plans. So if we did get to a certain level of overfunding, at what point would we take a look at dialing down that annual required contribution? Or would we not? Would it depend upon where we were at in relation to 2036. Obviously, if we're 115% funded in 2024, you still got another 11 years for the markets to kind of turn around and whatever else. So I just want to make sure that I'm capturing what your intent is and that that I have a good, clear understanding of what that proposed change might look like and the impact it might have on the policy.
Maybe we ought to include a time frame because you might have 110 this year, but next year it might drop, you know, depending on. So maybe if it stays at a certain level for whatever year, a couple years, 3 years, then you want to consider, because these assumptions tend to change all the time. So what's this year is positive. Next year it could be gone and we could be back to 100 or below 100. So I think a lot of it's going to be, as it occurs, we have to decide how to deal with it. But I think just because it's 1 year, it could go away the next year without us doing anything.
So I have a, let Jim go first and I can jump in.
I was going to simply say the nice thing is that this policy has to be reviewed every year and approved by the county council. So that gives the commission or whatever entity exists over the long haul the ability of looking at it and making recommendations for funding. And I'm not certain that we can know exactly what that funding level is going to be year by year, but if we can get something in there about the maintenance of 100%, then probably internally you can create those channels, David, and recommend what the funding differences might be from year to year, which probably won't be significant.
David, no?
Okay, so I'll spitball some ideas here for David. So when it says the council's PSPRS and CRP funding ratio goes 100% fully funded, I would say through June 30th, 2036 and beyond, because we have an obligation to keep it funded past that individual date that we've set, understand that we'll still be paying pensions in 2040 and 2041. I would keep all of the established goal, you know, all those three bullet points there. I would look at that next paragraph. Council has determined that in order to achieve the 100% funding ratio, the following actions will be taken. In fiscal year this, we're going to make a $10 million payment. We're going to issue the bonds in the next fiscal year. We are planning to maintain an ARC rate of whatever it is in our latest draft that we figured this out for, 30 point whatever, and that would maintain the ARC payment from operating revenues. Go from there, obviously you're gonna have the estimated combined ARC would be that and that from the specific rate. The next bullet point where it says at such time the ARC is projected to be reduced, the town should endeavor to continue paying the ARC rate at the rate of 30 point whatever in order to maintain the funding ratio goal at 100%. And then the last two are, the last two bullets I would keep the same. And I would add a fifth bullet point that says bring in outside help to evaluate our policy to see if it meets best practices.
I think you're right on, Dave.
I think that's, you just say this is what we're suggesting, the $10 million in the bond. We're going to keep the ARC here in order to maintain it at 100% funded. And every once in a while, we're going to come back in 5 or 10 years periodically and say, is this what we're doing? And is it working? And I think that's what I would stick in there. Did you get all that, David?
I believe so. Let me take a stab at active listening here. So we're going to add a bullet point. Council has determined that in order to achieve the 100% funding ratio goal, the following actions will be taken. Make a $10 million payment from reserves. Issue $17 million in pension obligation debt. Would be bullet number two. Bullet number three, maintain ARC payment from operating revenues. Council is committed to maintaining the estimated combined ARC. I believe that that bullet pretty much stays the same, if I'm not mistaken, Commissioner Newell. Please correct me if I missed that one. Bullet number four, at such time the ARC is projected to be reduced, the town should endeavor to continue paying the ARC at the higher rate. And I can list the rate there.
Yeah, I would list it at the historical rates.
1.62% or whatever.
Just because, again, everything that we've done with these numbers, that's the number we need for, you know, option four to work based on our best research.
To maintain the funding ratio goal of 100% based on funding availability, the and then options or the sorry the bullets 5 and 6 or is, yeah 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 yes retain the 20-year amortization of the unfunded liability remains the same, and then there's the review of the local board practices annually that would also remain the same. Am I missing anything, or did I capture the gist of
it? Oh, that's absolutely perfect. I just had one additional bullet point at the bottom, which was periodically bring in outside help to maintain best practices, as we did here, if needed.
And then, sorry, there's one more bullet that was on the next page that I was missing. This bullet, I believe, can go away if, again, it would depend on what council action was, but if council action was to go without option 4, then there would be no need for the additional $500,000 annual payment. So that bullet would actually be removed.
Yep, that payment, and then I think the intent to achieve its goal with these funding targets of 24-20-32 can all be, you know, disappeared. We think we're going to hold it at 100% with this, or be close to it.
Okay, David Genhart, when does Bill and his team present to the council?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, they are presenting April 7th.
April 7th. Okay, so we have a little bit of time. So with all of the input that you've gotten from us today, if you could put together a draft and take your time in your spare time and send it out to all of the commissioners and have them provide their edits and review of that, and then send it back into you at a very rapid pace. It would give us an opportunity to present to the council not only Bill's work with his team and the financial analysis that was done, but also how that's going to impact the policy as it now stands. You know, what gets added in, what gets deleted, what is the impact? And I think that would give them a clear indication of what the recommendation does. Because that's, in essence, what they'll be looking at in the final edit and draft is what is the policy going to say and what is expected to be executed. So it would be helpful if the commission felt comfortable that what was put forward reflects what's in option 4. And I think you've got it pretty well written down.
Are the options going to be presented to the mayor and council? So they'll get the briefing that for the last two sessions, they'll get the whole presentation then?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Mason, we'll want to make sure that the council has the benefit of the entire thought process from CBIZ. Here's the scenarios that were originally thought, here's what we went to, here's the conversation, and then because I think that's important. Well, we have Councilmember Bowen who has sat in this evening, and the mayor has sat in as well. I think they all deserve to have a level playing field in that regard.
Thank you.
And I think, Mary, to your point, it's important for the council to know that there was extensive analysis done on many options, and that the consultants who really educated themselves and have the expertise of, from a financial standpoint, have recommended a particular option. So they get to face the firing line as well. And the commission concurred and makes the recommendation that's before them. And I think you're right. They're going to want to see it anyway. I can only imagine that they'll want to see all of the options. So I think you're absolutely correct, Mary. So I think what we've decided is that at this moment, David will put out a draft of the revised policy. We'll take a look at it. Everybody provide, and David, give us a deadline. Tell us when to get it back into you. And we'll We'll get you those comments back if they need to be made, any more made. And then we'll have something to go forward along with the, I think it'd be best to make that available to the council at the time that they get the presentation and do their study session with Bill and his team. At this point, because we still have an edited draft of the policy, do we need to make a motion? I noted there was one in the packet. Are you looking for a motion at this time? We made a motion on the option choice. Do we need one for a unedited policy draft at this point?
I think we can come back to you at your next meeting with a updated, because it'll have to go before council anyway. And so I think we heard, and Dave will get working on a draft, and then we'll plan to put it on your next meeting agenda.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure we're not holding anything up here. And all right. Then if that be the case, I'm going to conclude that item and move on in the agenda. I want to thank, first of all, Bill and his team for all the hard work that you put in there. And I think if I remember, your office is located in Philadelphia, and you're probably about 10 o'clock there coming from. So thanks for all of the effort that you've put in. Next in our agenda, we would have council liaison comments. And looking at the participants, I don't see council member Nicholson here. So unless he's on the phone, I don't believe we're going to get any update from him. Allison, you have no one on the phone, I take it?
No, I do not.
All right, then let us move on. And future agenda items. We do have coming towards us next month the recommended budget. And as I said, we'll be working with that to provide and submit written comments or questions to Mr. Gebhardt once we've had a chance to review that. We'll provide you with a deadline to do that. And hopefully when we get to our next meeting, which will be at 4 o'clock on April 20th, the commission will be able to see not only their questions, but all the other commissioners' questions that were submitted to Mr. Gebhardt. Is there any other future agenda items that any commissioner would like to bring up? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to adjournment. So do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. We are adjourned at 6:22. Thank you very much, appreciate it.
Take care.
Take care.
Be healthy.